This is a reading of a lecture cycle by Rudolf Steiner entitled The Apocalypse of St. John. This is lecture 2, given in Nuremberg on the 19th of June, 1908. Yesterday, we described the spirit of the Apocalypse of John in a general way. We tried to give a few broad guidelines, showing that in this apocalypse is described what may be called a Christian initiation. Today it will be my task to present to you in general the nature of initiation, to describe what takes place in a man when, through initiation, he is enabled to see for himself into those spiritual worlds which lie behind the sense worlds. And further, it will be my task to give in broad outline a description of the experiences in initiation. For only by entering a little more closely into the nature of initiation can we gradually understand this significant religious record known as the Apocalypse. First of all, we must consider closely the two states of human consciousness, the one lasting from morning when a person awakes until evening when he goes to sleep, and the other, which begins when he goes to sleep and ends when he awakes. We have often brought to mind that man, as we know him in his present form, is, to begin with, a fourfold being, that he consists of the physical, etheric, and astral bodies and the ego. To spiritual vision, these four principles appear in their external form, with the human physical body enclosed in the center like a kind of kernel. Let us make a diagram we can look at. Rudolf Steiner drew. During the day, this physical body is permeated by the so-called etheric or life body, which projects very slightly round about the head as a luminous halo, but which also completely permeates the head. Further down, it becomes more cloudy and indistinct, and the more it approaches the lower parts of man, the less definitely does it show the form of the physical body. Now, these two principles of man are, during the day, enveloped by what we call the astral body, which projects on all sides like an ellipse, in the shape of an egg. And in its fundamental form, it has luminous rays which look as if their direction really were from outside inward, as if they would penetrate from outside to the inner part of man. Within this astral body are outlined innumerable different figures, all kinds of lines and rays, many like flashes of lightning, many in curious twists. All this surrounds the human being in the most varied manifestations of light. The astral body is the expression of his passions, instincts, impulses, and desires, but also of all his thoughts and ideas. The clairvoyant consciousness sees portrayed in this astral body all that one calls soul experiences, from the lowest urges to the highest moral ideals. Then we have the fourth principle of man, which one might sketch as if something were sending its rays to a point lying about 1 centimeter behind the forehead. This would be the diagrammatic representation of the fourfold man. In the course of these lectures, we shall see how the several parts are distinguished in the whole. This is the picture of man during the day, from morning when he wakes until night when he goes to sleep. Now, when he goes to sleep, the physical and etheric bodies remain in bed, and a kind of streaming out of the astral body takes place. Streaming out does not express it quite exactly. It is really as if a kind of mist were to form, so that in the night we see the astral body, which has withdrawn from the physical and the etheric bodies, like a kind of spiral mist around the man, while the fourth principle of the human being disappears almost entirely toward one side, that is, it disperses and becomes vague. The lower part of the astral body can only just be seen. It is the upper part which is addressed as the, quote, astral body that has stepped out, closed quote. Yesterday we emphasized what has to happen to a person if he is to receive initiation. If he occupies himself only with the customary activities of the present day, he is unable to receive initiation. He must be so prepared that during ordinary daily life, he performs the exercises of meditation, concentration, etc., prescribed for him by the schools of initiation. With regard to their significance for the human being, these exercises are basically the same in all initiation schools. They only differ slightly in that the further we go back into pre-Christian schools of initiation, the more they are directed to the training of thought, to the exercise of the power of thinking. The nearer we approach to Christian times, the more are these exercises directed to training the forces of feeling. And the nearer we come to modern times, the more we see how in the so-called Rosicrucian training, conditioned by the demands and requirements of mankind, a particular kind of will cultivation, the exercise of the will, is introduced. Although the meditations are at first similar to those of pre-Christian schools, there nevertheless prevails everywhere, at the basis of the Rosicrucian exercises, a particular training of the element of will. What matters, however, and what was achieved just as well by the exercises of the Oriental mystery schools, the Egyptian and the Pythagorean schools, and by the exercises that emanate chiefly from meditation on the Gospel of St. John, is that the person is so influenced during the day, even if only briefly, perhaps for 5 or 15 minutes, that the influence continues when he falls asleep and his astral body withdraws. The astral body of a man who performs such, shall we say, occult exercises, gradually manifests many different changes at night. It manifests different light effects. It shows that molded formation of the organs of which we have already spoken, and this becomes ever more distinct. The astral body gradually acquires an inner organization, such as the physical body possesses in its eyes, ears, and so on. Yet still, this would never lead one to see much, particularly in the case of the man of the present day. One does, however, have some slight perception when the inner organs have been developing for a while. One begins to have consciousness during sleep. A spiritual environment dawns from the otherwise universal darkness. Man perceives wonderful pictures of plant life. This was more especially the case in ancient times. Today it is rarer. These are the most primitive achievements of clairvoyance. Where previously there was only the darkness of unconsciousness, there now arises something of a dreamlike plant structure, yet living and real. Much of what is described in the mythologies of ancient peoples was seen in this way. When we read in legends that Woden, Vilja, and Ve found a tree on the seashore, and that from it they created man, this indicates that it was first seen in such a picture. Aside, Woden, W-O-D-E-N, I'm reading it, Vilje, V-I-L-J-E, and then another word, V-E, I could say Ve, so Woden, Vilje, and Ve. End of aside. In all mythologies, you may perceive this primitive kind of sight, this vision of plants. Paradise is also the description of such a vision. Paradise with its two trees of knowledge and of life. It is the result of this astral vision. It is not without reason that in Genesis itself is indicated that paradise, together with all that is described in the beginning of the Bible, was thus seen. First, we must learn to read the Bible. Then we shall understand how closely and significantly it portrays this mysterious condition in its descriptions. In former times, they did not teach of paradise, of the beginning of the Bible, as we do now. Then it was pointed out that Adam fell into a sleep, and that was the sleep, so it was told to the early Christians, in which Adam, looking back, perceived the visions described at the beginning of Genesis. Only in our day do we believe that such words as, quote, Adam fell into a sleep, close quote, are just an accident. They are no accident. Every word in the Bible has a deep meaning, and only he can understand the Bible who knows how to value every single word. That is the first thing. Then, however, in the pre-Christian mysteries, something special had to take place. When the pupil had performed his exercises for a long period, and this lasted for a very long time, when he had, more or less, taken in what was necessary to produce order in his soul, when he had absorbed what we now call anthroposophy, then he was at last able to participate in the old initiation proper. In what did this old initiation consist? It is not sufficient that organs be formed in the astral body. They must be imprinted in the etheric body. Just as the letters of a seal are imprinted in sealing wax, so must the organs of the astral body be imprinted in the etheric body. For this purpose, the neophyte in ancient initiations was brought into a particular condition. For 3.5 days he lay in a death-like condition. We shall see more and more that this condition cannot and may not be brought about in our day, but that there are now other means of initiation. I am now describing pre-Christian initiation, in which the neophyte was for 3.5 days put into a death-like condition by the Hierophant. Either he was laid in a kind of small chamber, a kind of grave, where he lay in a death-like sleep, or he was bound in a particular position with outstretched hands on a cross, for this facilitated the arrival of the condition aimed at. From many different lectures we know that death takes place in man when the etheric body withdraws together with the astral body and the ego, so that only the physical body remains behind. At death, something takes place which otherwise has never occurred between birth and death in the ordinary course of life. The etheric body never, even in the deepest sleep, leaves the physical body, but is always within it. At death, it leaves the physical body. Now, during that death-like condition, part at least of the etheric body left the physical body, so that a part of the etheric body which was within it before, in this condition, found itself outside. This is described, as you know, in more exoteric lectures, by saying that the etheric body is withdrawn. That is not actually the case, but we can only now make the necessary fine distinctions. In the 3.5 days during which the priest initiate carefully watched over... Let me read that again. In the 3.5 days during which the priest initiate carefully watched over the neophyte, only the lower part of the body of the pupil was united with the etheric body. This is the moment when the astral body, with all the organs formed in it, imprints itself in the etheric body. At this moment, illumination takes place. When the neophyte was awakened after 3.5 days, what is called illumination had come to him, namely that which had to follow after purification, which consists merely in the development of the organs of the astral body. The pupil was now a, quote, knower, close quote, in the spiritual world. What he had previously seen was only a preparatory stage of vision. This world, consisting of forms somewhat resembling plants, was now supplemented by essentially new images. We have now to describe more exactly what the initiate then began to see. When he had been led to illumination, it was clear to him when he was awakened that he had seen something which he had previously never been able to include in his knowledge. What then had he seen? What was he able to call up, in a certain sense, before his soul, as an important memory picture of his vision? If we wish to understand what he had seen, we must cast a glance at the evolution of man. We must remember that man has only gradually gained the degree of individual consciousness he now possesses. He could not always say I to himself, as he does today. We need only go back to the time when the Cherusci, the Heruli, and so on, lived in the parts now inhabited by the Germans. The different human beings did not then feel themselves as separate human egos, but as members of the tribe. Just as fingers do not feel themselves to be something existing independently, so each Cheruscan did not feel that he could unconditionally say I to himself. His I was the I of the whole tribe. The tribe represented a single organism, and a group of men who were related by blood had one ego-soul in common. In those days, you yourselves were members of a greater community, just as today your two arms belong to your ego. This may be clearly seen in the case of the people dealt with in the Old Testament. Each single member felt himself to be a member of the race. The individual did not speak of himself in the highest sense when he uttered the ordinary I. But he felt something deeper when he said, I and Father Abraham are one. For he felt a certain ego consciousness which descended from Abraham through all the generations to each member of the race. Whoever was related by blood was included in one I. It was like a common group soul ego, which included the whole race, and those who understood the matter said, what really forms our inmost immortal being dwells not in the separate members, but in the entire race. All of the several members belong to this common ego. Hence, such a one knew that when he died, he united himself with an invisible being, which reached back to Father Abraham. The individual really felt that he returned to Abraham's bosom. He felt that his immortal part found refuge in the group soul of the race. This group soul of the entire race could not descend to the physical plane. The people themselves saw only the separate human forms, but these were to them not the reality, for the reality was in the spiritual world. They dimly felt that what flowed through the blood was the divine, and because they had to see God in Jehovah, they called this divinity Yahweh, or also his countenance, Michael. They saw Yahweh as the spiritual group soul of the people. The individual human being on the physical plane could not see these spiritual beings. The initiate, on the other hand, who experienced the great moment when the astral body was imprinted in the etheric body, was able to see first of all the most important group souls. When we look back into ancient periods of mankind, we everywhere find that the present ego has developed from such a group consciousness, a group ego. So that when the seer looks back, he finds that the individual human beings flow together more and more into the group souls. Now, there are four chief types of group soul, four archetypes. If we observe all the various group souls of the different souls, we notice a certain similarity, but there are also differences. If we classify them, there are four groups, four archetypes. The spiritual observer sees them clearly when he looks back to the time when man was not yet in the flesh, when he had not yet descended to the earth. We must now consider more exactly the moment when, from the spiritual regions, man descended into flesh. This can only be represented in great symbols. There was a time when our earth was composed of very much softer material than it is now, when rock and stone were not so solid, when the forms of the plants were quite different, when the whole was as if embedded like a primeval ocean in water caves, when air and water were not separated, when all the beings now dwelling on the earth, the animals and plants, were molded in water. When the mineral beings began to assume their present form, man emerged from invisibility. The neophyte saw it in this way. Surrounded by a kind of shell, man descended from the regions which are now regions of air. He was not yet as physically condensed when the animals already existed in the flesh. He was a delicate airy being, even in the Lemurian epoch. And he so developed that the clairvoyant picture shows the four group souls. On the one side, something like the image of a lion. On the other, the likeness of a bull. Up above, something like an eagle. And below, in the center, something similar to man. Such is the clairvoyant picture. Thus, man comes forth from the darkness of the spirit land, and the force which formed him appears as a kind of rainbow. The more physical powers surround the entire structure of this man like a rainbow. We have to describe this development of man in various realms and in various ways. Just now we have described how it appears to the investigator when he looks back and sees how these four group souls have developed out of the common God-man which descends. From time immemorial, this stage has been symbolized in the form represented in the second of the so-called seven occult seal pictures. That is the symbolic representation, but it is more than a mere symbol. There you see these four group souls emerging from an undefined spiritual background, the rainbow surrounding it, and the number 12. We must also understand what this 12-foldness signifies. When what has just been described is seen coming forth, there is a clairvoyant feeling that it is surrounded by something of an entirely different nature from what is emerging from the indeterminate spiritual realm. In ancient times, this something by which it is surrounded was symbolized by the zodiac, by the 12 signs of the zodiac. The moment of entering into spiritual vision is also connected with many other experiences. The first thing perceived by one whose etheric body goes forth is that he seems to be growing larger and larger and extending himself over what he then perceives. The moment comes when the initiate says, "I do not merely see these four forms, but I am within them. I have expanded my being over them." He identifies himself with them. He perceives what is symbolized by the 12 constellations, by the 12-foldness. We shall best understand what thus spreads itself around, what reveals itself, if we remember that our earth has passed through previous incarnations. We know that before the capital Earth became Earth, it went through the condition of capital Saturn, then through that of capital Sun, then through that of capital Moon, and only then did it become Earth in today's sense. This was necessary, for only in this way was it possible for the beings we see on the earth around us to come forth as they have done. They had gradually to work their way through such changing forms. So when we look back into the primeval past, we see the first condition of our earth, that of ancient Saturn, which at the beginning of its existence did not even shine. It consisted of a kind of warmth. You would not have been able to see it as a shining sphere, but had you approached, you would have come into a warmer space, because it then consisted only of warmth. Someone might now ask, did the development of the world begin with Saturn? Did not, perhaps, other conditions bring about what became Saturn? Was not Saturn preceded by other incarnations? It would be difficult to go back before Saturn, because only with Saturn does something begin without which it is impossible to go back beyond Saturn. Namely, what we call time. Previously, there were other forms of being. That is to say, we cannot really speak of a before, because time did not yet exist. Even time had a beginning. Before Saturn, there was no time. There was only eternity, duration. All was then simultaneous. Only with Saturn did it come about that events followed one another. In that state of the universe, where there is only eternity, duration, there is also no movement, for movement takes place in time. There is no circulation, no revolution, there is duration and rest. As one says in occultism, there is blissful rest in duration. That is the expression for it. Blissful rest in duration preceded the Saturn condition. The movement of the heavenly bodies only commenced with Saturn. The path indicated by the 12 signs of the zodiac was conceived of as a sign of this, and the time during which a planet passed through one of these constellations was spoken of as a cosmic hour. 12 cosmic hours, 12 hours of day and 12 of night. To each cosmic body, Saturn, Sun, and Moon is reckoned a consecutive number of cosmic hours, which are grouped into cosmic days. And of these 12 periods of time, 7 are outwardly perceptible, and 5 are more or less outwardly imperceptible. We distinguish, therefore, 7 Saturn revolutions, or 7 great Saturn days, and 5 great Saturn nights. We might also say 5 days and 7 nights, for the first and last days are twilight days. We are accustomed to call these 7 revolutions, these 7 cosmic days, manvantaras, and the 5 cosmic nights, pralayas. If we wish to have it exactly correspond to our reckoning of time, we reckon 2 planetary conditions together, that is, Saturn and Sun, Moon and Earth, and we then get 24 revolutions. These 24 revolutions form important epochs in the representation of the world, and we picture these 24 revolutions ruled by beings in the universe who are represented in the apocalypse as the 24 elders, the 24 rulers of the cosmic revolutions, the cosmic periods. In the occult seal picture, they are shown as the cosmic clock. The numbers on the clock are here only interrupted by the double crowns of the elders to indicate that these are the time kings because they rule the revolutions of the cosmic bodies. Parenthesis, see the second occult seal picture. Close parenthesis. The initiate sees this when he first looks back into this picture of the past. We must now ask, why does the initiate see this picture? Because in it are represented symbolically, in astral pictures, the forces which have formed man's etheric body in its present shape, and, corresponding with this, the physical body. Why this is so, you can easily imagine. Imagine a man lying in bed. With his astral body and ego, he leaves the physical body and etheric body. But now, to the physical and etheric bodies, as they are today, to man's present physical and etheric bodies belong the astral body and the ego. This physical and this etheric body cannot exist alone. They have become what they are because the astral body and ego have been membered into them. Only a physical body, which contains neither blood nor nerves, can exist without an astral body and ego. That is the reason why the plant can exist without astral body and ego, because it has neither blood nor nervous system. For the nervous system is connected with the astral body, and the blood with the ego. There is no being with a nervous system that can have a physical body not permeated by an astral body. And there is no being with a blood system that can have a physical body into which the ego has not entered. Think of what you do every night. You callously desert your physical and etheric bodies and leave them to themselves with their blood and nervous systems. If it merely depended upon you, your physical body would have to die every night through your deserting your nervous and blood systems. It would die the very moment the astral body and ego left the physical and etheric bodies. But the clairvoyant eye, EYE, sees how other beings, higher spiritual beings, then occupy it. It sees how they pass into it and do what man does not do in the night, namely take care of the blood and nervous systems. These are the same beings, however, who have created man. Insofar as he consists of a physical body and etheric body, not only today but from incarnation to incarnation. They are the same beings who caused the first rudiments of the physical body to originate upon ancient Saturn, and who formed the etheric body upon the Sun. These beings who, from the very beginning of the Saturn and Sun periods, have ruled in the physical and etheric bodies, now rule every night while man is asleep and callously leaves his physical and etheric bodies, surrendering them to death, so to speak. They penetrate and take care of his blood and nervous systems. Hence, too, it is comprehensible that at the moment when the astral body touches the etheric body, in order to imprint itself there, man who is pervaded by those forces which have formed him then sees the picture of these forces, which are symbolized in the second occult seal picture. All that upholds him in life and connects him with the whole universe flashes out at this moment of initiation. He sees what has formed the two members of his being, the physical body and etheric body, and what preserves their life every night. But he himself has still no share in it, for he cannot yet work into these two principles of his being. If it depended upon man, the physical body and the etheric body, which during the night lie in bed, would be condemned to a plant existence, for he leaves them to themselves. Hence to man the state of sleep is an unconscious condition, such as the plant always possesses. Now, what has happened in the case of an ordinary man to the part that has withdrawn during sleep? What has become of the astral body and the ego? These also are unconscious during the night. The ordinary man experiences nothing in his astral body during sleep at night. But suppose a person were passing through the seven stages of the John initiation, those important stages in Christian initiation. He experiences not merely what has been described up to now, quite apart from the fact that when the astral body touches the etheric body, he is able to develop clairvoyant power, something else would come about. He becomes conscious of the soul characteristics, the human soul qualities of the astral and devachanic worlds, out of which he is actually born, as far as his soul is concerned. To this picture is added a still higher symbol, which seems to fill the whole world. To this symbol of the old initiation, there is added, for one who passes through the stages of the initiation of John, something else which may best be represented by the first occult seal picture. He sees a spiritual vision of the priest-king with a golden girdle, with feet as of cast metal, his head covered with hair as of white wool, out of his mouth a fiery sword flaming, and in his hand the seven cosmic stars, Saturn, Sun, Moon, Mars, Mercury, Jupiter, Venus. Parenthesis, Revelation 1:12, close parenthesis. The form in the center of the second occult seal picture was only indicated in the old initiation as the fifth of the group souls. It is what only existed germinally in ancient humanity, and only emerged as what is described as the Son of Man, who rules the seven stars when he fully appears to man in his true form. Thus, from this symbolical representation, we must first of all clearly understand that the separation of the various principles in present-day humanity, physical body and etheric body on the one hand, and astral body and ego on the other, may be so considered that each may contribute its part, as it were, to initiation. First of all, through the form of initiation, when the astral body touches the etheric body, when the four group souls flash out, and then in the treatment of the astral body, so that this too acquires the ability to see. Previously, the highest vision in the supersensible world only reached as far as a kind of plant experience of the world. Through Christian initiation, a higher stage of initiation is reached in the astral body, as symbolically shown in the first occult seal picture. Here you have the two things mentioned at the beginning of the Apocalypse, described from the principle of initiation itself. The writer of the Apocalypse has, however, described them in the reverse order, and rightly so. He first describes the vision of the Son of Man, the appearance of him who is, who was, and who is to come, and then the other. Both are symbols of what the initiate experiences during initiation. Thus we have described what happens in certain cases of initiation and what is at first experienced. Tomorrow we shall proceed further to the details of these real, actual experiences, and we shall find them reflected in the mighty presentation given in the Apocalypse of John. The end of Lecture 2.